good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It is April 24th, 2020. It is Friday, TGIF. Does TGIF still apply when no one's working?
Because... There you go. Brings new meaning to some of our phrases, huh?
It does. It does. We're going to have to think of something else until we all get, well, I'm working, so it does apply for
for
me.
That's right.
So TGIF. So I hope you all are safe out there today. And let's just go ahead and get right to the metals market today. Fridays are always a hectic day trying to get everybody settled and shipped, and so I had the first time I was able to look at the paper markets today. Oh brother. Gold was down 5.30 today at 1728, had a high of 1737, but she came back real strong after the low was 1707. Silver basically holding from yesterday, 1532, down 2 pennies. Platinum was down 5 at 769. Palladium was up 29 at 2,083. The USDX today was down 0.20 at 100.28. Crude oil was up 47 cents at 1697. Go oil. And the paper markets today was... I saw a little bit of a trivia question today, Dave. When was the last time oil traded below $10? What president was in office? Do you know that? I guess he doesn't, because he's not saying anything that he does.
I'm still guessing. I think it was Reagan.
Well, you have to let us know that you're guessing. We just can't have dead air there, buddy.
You don't hear that. You don't hear that buzz going on.
We didn't hear the buzz. We didn't hear. We didn't hear the grind of the.
Yeah, slow grind. I'm afraid.
Yes. Did you Google that?
I honestly did not. I didn't have time to.
All right. Well, that you are correct. It was Ronald Reagan. I thought it was under 10 for Bush before we went. To Iraq, but it was Ronald Reagan.
I just remember being roughly 30 some years ago.
Mm-hmm. The Dow was up 260 points today at 23,775. The NASDAQ was up 139 at 8,634. The S&P was up 38 at 2,836. 10-year yield 0.60. Asian markets, European markets were down, with Europe down the most, about 1.5%, pretty much across the board in all of Europe. People are still holding on to that paper, and I guess as long as it's hold those levels, Dave, they're just not going to budge much. It just baffles me. It just baffles me how, with the amount of debt that they're just pumping out, the Treasury and the Fed, it just doesn't seem to bother anyone.
Well, just wait. Just wait. Things are looking bright for our friend Gold, as we'll talk more about later on in the program today.
And,
what it does mean is that a lot of people are going to miss out, even though people may think gold's high by historical standards, as an investor, to the extent it's going to get a lot higher, you're going to miss out on some very, very good deals.
Absolutely. But it just baffles me that, normally if a member like McConnell comes out and basically says, hey, states, you got to file bankruptcy. Are you kidding me? Markets should have gone. But you know what? I just don't think anybody takes anything seriously from the administration. And I think that's just, what a stupid statement. but it's still a statement. And the importance of that statement is just to see the dire condition of these states and what they have to face in a very short period of time. Yesterday, Dave, we had the Purchasing Managers Index numbers. There were more data this morning showing how hard, of course, the economic activity is. In Germany, business confidence dropped to a record low. UK retail sales suffered their biggest fall ever in March. Jobless claims yesterday, we talked about them. U.S. unemployment is already close to 20%. You have everyone that's working. The bill was passed for the next stimulus package, $500 million. European leaders, they endorsed a half a billion euro plan, which is close to $600 billion in U.S. dollars. These are just the numbers we're touching on. Everyone is expecting, even the Treasury Secretary, he's expecting the economy to start reopening in May and June. So I'm not so sure. They may reopen in May and June, but I'm not quite sure what type of a strong rebound they actually have in mind.
Well, I know what they have in mind, particularly the closer we get to November. I'm just not sure how disappointed they're going to be. But I guess we shall see. Interestingly, Mnuchin's also apparently considering the creation of a government lending, i.e. bailout program for U.S. oil companies.
Yes.
That have been devastated by the collapse in crude prices recently. One of the options on the table, I guess, is for the administration to take equity stakes, not the administration, but the U.S. government, to take equity stakes in exchange for loans. Treasury Department statement published late yesterday, so I don't know if that came before yesterday's show or after, said the government could accept debt instruments or other financial instruments in companies that accept bailout money. Now, the coronavirus, while trending lower in much of Europe now, is still showing warring signs of resilience in the face of social distancing measures, leading to increased worries of this second wave of infections should restrictions be lifted too early. And we saw Germany have its largest jump in new cases and deaths in nearly a week. Russia, surprisingly, reported an increase. Spain, on the other hand, reporting the lowest number of deaths in over a month. And drug maker Gilead shares dropped after a summary of a Chinese trial of its malaria drug appeared to show it was a failure in treating COVID-19.
At the end of the year, where they always come out with the most phrase or word that is, that trended throughout the year?
Yeah.
It's going to be social distancing. I know that. That's what it's going to be.
I'm telling you, I'm going to bet on you, Melody, that I'd be shocked. if it wasn't.
And that's going to be the number one. And see, ladies and gentlemen, I can see into the future. There you go. I polished my crystal ball today, and that's what it told me. So write that down on a calendar, Dave. And at the end of the year next year, we'll be bringing that story to you. U.S. consumer sentiment, again, the third straight month, no surprise there that it fell. The index fell to 71.8 in April from 89.1 in March. Economists expected a print of 67. Now, Dave.
Melody.
This is the University of Michigan.
It is.
This data.
They're smart people up there.
Well, cold, I don't know cold, about that.
Cold, but apparently smart.
Yeah, I know. We got a lot of customers in Michigan, and they are smart. But come on.
What?
Consumer, the world is shut down except for Wall Street investment trading and the consumer sentiment their people have been shut in their homes, only fell to 71.8.
26 million filing for jobless benefits. It is a very, perhaps the biggest eye-opening statistic that we've seen and reported on in some time. Now, consumers have tended to be more optimistic over the past few years than, you know, given the not the stock market, but the real economy. Although I did read somewhere some time ago that as a criticism of the Michigan index, that University of Michigan index, that is, that a lot of respondents were thinking in terms of the stock market vis-a-vis their 401ks.
Yep.
And it's a dangerous thing because, I mean, well, look at things now. I mean, that's probably not a fair comparison, because we are in probably the most challenging times of our lifetimes, for sure. Still, the 67 expectation, perhaps that's a little more realistic, but even then, that seems high.
I know. So, you know, it's all how you ask the question.
Yeah, how about it?
How you ask, but yeah,
we'll have to dig into that sometime and see how that is posed to people.
I used to manage a marketing research company.
That's fun.
And we used to, so it is all how you ask the question.
Ministress of propaganda, huh?
Yeah, no. But so again, as you mentioned, we've got 26 million job losses over the past 5 weeks. I'm glad people are confident and out there, and they're very optimistic. So we'll see what happens when the economies begin to open up and they realize that, gee, their job isn't coming back. Then maybe they'll see a little bit of a difference. Right now, everybody thinks, well, this is a temporary job loss. It's a temporary furlough. It's a temporary layoff. Well, a lot of those jobs are going to be permanent.
So, yeah, we'll see.
I hate to say it, but a lot of them will be, particularly in the oil industry.
And mom-and-pop shops.
Mom-and-pop shops. Because in order for them to recover, they're going to have to probably work double hours again to try and build it up without the extra employees and so forth. But anyway.
Yeah, that's sad stuff. And in related news, new orders for key U.S.-made capital goods unexpectedly rose in March, but the gains are not likely to be sustainable amid the pandemic. Orders for non-defense capital goods, excluding aircraft, it's a closely watched proxy for business spending plans, actually edged up 0.1% last month, at least according to the Commerce Department. Economists had forecast core capital goods, good orders, to plunge 6%. But U.S. durable good orders overall sank 14.4%. In March, compared with expectations for roughly a 12% drop. That was after rising 1.2% in February. That makes more sense.
Yeah. Well, you know what? The orders for non-defense capital goods, maybe that includes ventilators, and that's why it was up.
Ooh, very interesting. Mm-hmm. I suspect it does.
Yeah. Oh, so. And a lot of these other things that were needed, perhaps. But anyway, just a thought there, ladies and gentlemen. We talked about this. Everybody knows, of course, the House voted on in favor of the $484 billion relief. I don't know. Did President Trump sign it already, or is it going to?
Yes.
He did sign it already. Okay.
Signed earlier this afternoon.
So, you know, $60 billion goes to the Economic Injury Disaster Loan Program. It reaches communities and small businesses in underserved areas. You have $75 billion for hospitals, $25 billion to expand testing. I don't know if there's anything new in there that we found, you know, that we didn't know was in there.
I don't think so. It came out pretty much as had been reported after, when the Senate passed it earlier this week. What I'm finding interesting is the next phase. They're calling it the Phase 4 deal. Talks already well underway, apparently. But there's a division over what that bill should look like. You mentioned, let's put it this way. McConnell has indicated, and I think this is his way of suggesting that the next round, or it's going to start getting more difficult, not just going to have these rubber stamped voice votes in the Senate, at least, anymore. He says, you know, members are going to have to, at least members of the Senate, are going to have to come back to Washington to vote in person, much like the House did with this phase, with whatever phase you're calling yesterday's passage. The House voted in 9 different separate sessions, if you will. That was to maintain social distancing guidelines. Anyway, and McConnell, the big issue is going to be over this state and local government funding. It's a top demand of the Democrats. McConnell is, of course, as Melody said, has been suggesting that states just declare bankruptcy rather than be bailed out. Who knows where it's going to end up? You know, there's also funding for the Postal Service, rental housing assistance, and so on and so forth. But Melody, is it me, or does what happened? I mean, do people remember that our airports, roads, bridges, sewer systems, and other infrastructure is crumbling? Are we out of money to consider things we've been talking about for several years now? I'm not downplaying it. Certainly, you know, if there was going to be a bailout, some of it had to go, and not enough has gone to individuals and small businesses. What about the stuff that we, this stuff we really need too?
That'll come right out before the election, most likely.
Okay.
That'll be the last one on the list. You know, as long as they can hold everything together, that'll be the last one on the list. But it really does irritate me. The more I think about with McConnell saying that states should go bankrupt, why doesn't he say that to all these other businesses? Why don't he say that to the Boeing? Why don't you say that to all the huge corporations that are getting the bailouts? Well, why don't you guys just go file bankruptcy and deal with it? We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. Today is Friday, April 24th. You know, I'm listening to some of these news reports, Dave, and they talk about, well, this was happening in February and so forth, and I'm thinking, February, March, April. And I'm thinking, February seems like it was a year ago.
It
doesn't even seem like it was February, March, and here we are still in April, and it's just like, oh my gosh. So that one true little joke that I saw, that February was 2 months ago, March was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And April is 10 years ago. Oh, it's just incredible.
As the world turns.
Yeah, because they're talking about February, and I'm thinking, well, then, you know, they need to start talking about more up to date stuff. And then I think, oh, yeah. Anyway.
It was literally another lifetime ago.
It does. Yes, it seems that way. But we touched on this a little bit earlier in the week, I think. But it is important to know, and it is very worth repeating. And that's how millions now in mortgage forbearance programs. Didn't we talk about this, where Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are buying them now?
Yeah, we talked about it from that perspective. This is a sort of a separate report focusing on the borrowers.
Yeah, it's... where more borrowers are opting to delay their monthly mortgage payments through these forbearance plans. Now, the majority are doing it through a program designed to provide relief to holders of these government-backed home loans, part of a $2.2 trillion CARES Act relief package. Just over 3.4 million borrowers representing, and we should probably take away just... over 3.4 million borrowers, representing 6.4% of all mortgages outstanding, are now in forbearance plans. That's an increase of 477,000, half a million loans in just 1 week, or nearly a 9% jump. These forbearances represent $750 billion in unpaid principal, almost $1 trillion. They include 5.6% of all loans backed by government-sponsored enterprises, Fannie and Freddie, and almost 9% of the FHA, VA loans. At the current level, mortgage servicers are required to advance $2.8 billion of principal and interest payments per month to mortgage bondholders of these government-backed loans. And... we talked about this Wednesday about Fannie and Freddie would be bound to make these payments for 4 months.
Yeah. The thing is, I'm sure that tally is expected to rise in the coming weeks, possibly even months, along with job losses, the longer. A good chunk of the economy remains shut down. I mean, if you think about it, borrowers have faced only one monthly payment since the full shutdown. Let's hope that...
That's what I find fascinating, just one month.
Yeah, that's why I'm
Actually, it's 2 months now.
Well, yeah, I guess as we approach the end of April. But it still gives cause for concern to hear government officials talking about, getting back or the economy rebounding, it beginning in the third quarter. It just seems like we have more ways to go. But
I think so.
So hope I'm wrong.
When you see these numbers, and how often have we said on this program, and I've said this in the past couple of weeks. Also, people didn't have savings for various reports, $300, $400, $500 emergency, $1,000 emergency, monthly emergency, medical bill of $1,000. And these are the ones who didn't. And when I can't even, and yet, you know what, Dave, we see government paying all these trillions of dollars in bailouts. Hey, you know what? Why should I make my payment?
Right.
Why don't government come and bail me out? And self-employed, finding it hard to get unemployment. So here's another sector of the people that are getting hurt and no talk. The self-employed, independent contractors, gig workers. They don't get any unemployment benefits, do they, Dave?
Well, regular unemployment benefits, correct. I mean, they're supposed to under the CARES Act, but it just ain't happening as quickly as I'm sure the now 26 million unemployed would like. Now, a good chunk of those, that 26 million, probably a significant chunk, do qualify for the regular employment. But the unemployed, the self-employed, these gig workers, independent contractors, are supposed to qualify for these so-called PUAs, Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Benefits. Everyone's supposed to get extended benefits for up to 39 weeks. Most states provide 26. And on top of that, they're supposed to get an extra $600 a week for a number of weeks, I think at least through sometime in late July. Problem is, states, this particular article focused on California. But in a number, particularly the bigger states, the systems, the computer systems that are being set up for online applications are one morass of confusion. And it's just what's happening is that people who, like these gig workers that should be getting benefits under the Relief Act, aren't. My daughter, who's a self-employed employee worker in Pennsylvania, has had an impossible time getting qualified through Pennsylvania's online unemployment compensation application system, which is extremely confusing and frustrating. I've tried three times now to help her after she just threw her hands up trying to do it herself. And it's multiply that over probably not all 50 states, but a good chunk. California, our largest state, people are getting... part of the problem is that in some states, I believe like California, Melody, they have to apply on people who normally don't qualify for regular unemployment, like the self-employeds, still have to apply for regular benefits. Wait until they're declared ineligible, and then use that ineligibility determination to reapply for the pandemic relief. And it just, bottom line, they're confusing the living crap out of folks. I'm sure unintentionally, just like it took longer for the individual relief checks to get out, just like millions of small businesses didn't make the cut for the first round of payroll protection now have unemployment. These unemployed people are finding it very difficult to get what is due under these relief measures.
Well, you know what? When it comes to times like this, I'm sure glad I'm older.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, because I remember those days when, you know, you're working and sometimes little things would pop up and, you know, but we always came through it. And I'm sure the younger and the new families and so forth will come through this too. There is another side to this. And but
hang in there, folks.
It won't be as easy this time for the folks as it was for us. Considering the hardships that we went through, you know, when we were coming out of any type of, you know, maybe personal situation, a job loss or whatever, it was fairly easy when we were growing up to find jobs. We could always, you know, find a better job and improve our wages and incomes and our benefits and so forth. It's a little more difficult in today's world, so they will have a harder time. But what else are we going to go with here? We talked about Neiman Marcus. I think they are going to file for bankruptcy, Dave. And Neiman Marcus is hoping its status as a luxury brand is going to help it emerge from the crisis, a leaner and stronger company. Hey, you know, all these companies that are carrying debt, why don't they all file bankruptcy?
I think... it could mean the end of retail for sure. We've been saying this for 2 years, that calling the retail apocalypse. And you see Neiman Marcus, which obviously is one of the type of retail stores that appealed to more of a luxury customer. Nevertheless, still a big name in the industry and a fairly big player. And... so it'll be interesting. Hudson Bay, which owns one of the big competitors of Neiman Marcus, Saks, has for some time apparently been considered a logical suitor to buy Neiman Marcus, and still may, once it files for bankruptcy, as early as Sunday, I guess, right? And sheds some of its debt. Sorry, debt holders.
Yeah, but, they're the retirement accounts.
I know.
They're pensions.
On the one hand, you some people say, well, you know, they took the risk, but you know, it's one of the tough consequences of bankruptcies under United States laws. It's usually the debt holders who are first among those to lose out.
What's next, Dave?
Well, we said the other day about the president's declaration to the Navy to shoot down and destroy Iranian gunboats.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You want to talk about that?
Sure.
Just now reading some follow-ups to that. Sort of bringing to a head his 3 years of urging military leaders to get tougher on this Iranian-style harassment, particularly at sea. Unlike in the days when James Mattis ran the DOD and sometimes, in fact, often ignored what he viewed as, call it, intemperate orders from the president, the pres now faces no meaningful resistance from his national security team. So these folks are saying that the risks of another confrontation with Iran have escalated, particularly as the coronavirus overwhelms the world. I don't know if they view that as a distraction. Probably so. Trump often looks for distractions during crises and has repeatedly done so in this case. But regardless of his motivations for returning to this threat now, his desire to target Iranian gunboats... sounding more and more familiar. mean, current and former advisors say that, that Trump actually lives in fear of Iran taking U.S. military personnel hostage. Rightly so, for a number of different reasons. Not the least of which, in an election year, he wants to avoid at all costs scenes of American weakness and humiliation playing across the world screens.
Hmm. Well, I don't have anything to say on that.
And that's not,
you know, it's a dangerous situation, and I mean I agree. And making idle threats now is a little different than making idle threats when, you know, you're in control and you don't have the world economy shut down.
Well, yeah, and I think the point of this opinion piece was that now our naval commanders have a lot more flexibility with Trump as commander-in-chief, to the extent he's made clear that they won't be reprimanded if they decide to, take him at what he says or tweets. It just may up the ante and just make it a little bit, if hopefully just a little bit, not a lot more likely of a commander taking it on his own. To what's the word? Engage.
You know, I think this is interesting because when we talk about technology replacing jobs and so forth, we don't talk about the tech companies that are kind of pulling back on their own hiring, and they pulled back quite sharply. And it's been a rough month since, of course, we talked about the unemployment numbers. And, of course, it's been a tough month for the tech companies in the San Francisco Bay Area. In the weeks since the shutdowns, when San Francisco, California had shut down to control the spread, we've seen a lot of industries, as we've been talking about throughout the whole program. And so we've seen this now beginning to hit technology. And I've heard from a lot of customers recently. I mean, a lot of people that have some high-powered jobs in the tech industry has lost their jobs.
Yeah, it's no one's immune, right?
So, I mean, so this is affecting all areas. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Texas Congressman Kevin Brady. He's the ranking member of the House and Ways and Means Committee. And, gee, he said higher taxes.
Not the answer.
But not the answer, but it's the only answer I think they have. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned.
Oh, won't you tell me?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231. And the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 800-375-4188. You know, we were talking about the Kevin Brady. We're going to talk about him, what he said about higher taxes and more regs is not the answer. It shouldn't be the response to this economic crisis that we have. He says you don't punish business in order to help that blue-collar worker. He thinks it's the opposite. He says we lift them together. Brady also said he believes policies enacted during the Trump presidency, during the 27 tax cut, helped put the U.S. economy in a robust position going into this crisis. And he says, I still think the worst thing we could do would be to reverse those policies, because I think they were key to us having the strong economy. And they're going to be even more important going forward. Brady said that letting workers keep more of what they earned is itself a boost to wages, and he contended that the overall strength of the economy also helped push wages higher and leads to more benefits for workers. What is he smoking is what I want to know, particularly being in Texas with this oil crisis now. I mean, there were some gains in wages, but that was mainly because there were states that had minimum wages of $15 were increased, and as the wages increased a paltry amount across the board, so did everything else. Health insurance, how about that? How about every other type of thing that you have to pay? Energy costs, they weren't keeping up with inflation. And in order to be carrying a $3 trillion deficit, they're going to have to increase taxes. What they want to do, Dave, I think, is they want to take off what? The income tax is one of them. And that pays for Social Security and Medicaid. Mm-hmm. So there goes your benefits, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who are on them.
Well, you know, for what it's worth, there are some folks who beg to disagree with Brady's assessment of the tax cuts that went into effect in 2018. A study published last May by the nonpartisan Congressional Research Service said most benefits in that law went to corporations and the wealthy, or have gone. Anyway, there is, you know, time to see if it plays out any more differently, with little boost to wages. Many agree that the government's massive spending and relief packages is necessary to weather this crisis. Some disagree with that, but opinions differ on what the long-term lessons from and the consequences of such spending will be. Yesterday, billionaire investor Leon Cooperman said he believes the coronavirus crisis will likely change capitalism and lead to higher taxes. When the government is called upon to protect you on the downside, they have every right to regulate you on the upside, he said. So capitalism is changed. Interesting perspective from that guy. I know a lot of people, a lot of his peers, in fact, will take issue with his position. But Brady says he believes the post-crisis discussion, on the one hand, has to have everything on the table. But on the other hand, he said, I don't think making us less competitive, less attractive, and taking more of what people earn will ultimately be the answer.
But it's the only answer. I mean, you can't put everything on the table when you have a deficit of $3 trillion.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like we're slowly but surely being conditioned to see a future state of the nation where there aren't any more tax increases, so revenues sort of decrease as a percentage of GDP over time. And we see there's virtually no interest whatsoever in containing expenses. So that will likely rise as a percentage of GDP over time. Bottom line, you know, with gross national debt already well over 100% now in the last, particularly as GDP has fallen over the last month and a half. Boy, it's going to be astounding in less than 10 years.
Yeah.
And anyone who may have had an inkling that, you know, we can start to pay this off sometime, I don't know that they'll ever be that appetite.
There's no way we could ever pay it off. We couldn't pay it off before we went into the crisis. I mean, we had debt too great to be paid. It was just managed. We'd never be able to pay it back.
Yeah.
And when the rates were rising,
if there were even a consensus to pay it off, I don't believe there is anymore. Maybe out in the country there is.
Well, it can't be paying. There's no money to pay it off.
Well,
taxpayers are tapped. Where's it coming from? It's debt too great to be paid.
Yeah.
And it's just as simple as that. And they managed it.
Well, this will be the interesting thing. I mean, if in the near term, if world economies continue to fall, especially if they fall significantly more, we know there's always been, and probably with few exceptions, will continue to be an appetite for U.S. Debt instruments. Other nations may not have the spare change.
Mm-mm.
To keep throwing our way.
Yeah, because they have to deal with their own anymore.
Yeah, now, you know, on the one hand, that's bad news for everybody in the one hand. But in the other, all that additional economic uncertainty, well, that's bound to have some upward pressure on precious metal prices.
And I think that's it's what you wrote about in our weekly blog, Dave. Am I correct?
Yes, it is. Blog is out as we speak. Check your email inboxes if you subscribe. If you don't, you can to our free weekly blogs and newsletters at dgscoins.com or read them on our Facebook page at dgscoins. But yes, Melody, unprecedented action by the Fed, Congress, and White House to stem this growing economic devastation from the pandemic will send gold soaring to $3,000 an ounce by the end of next year, so says Too Big to Fail Bank of America. Following federal guidelines, most state governors, as we know, issued stay-at-home orders to slow the spread of the virus, with the economy, our economy, grinding to a virtual halt and causing GDP to jump off the steepest cliff since the Great Depression. As a result, the Fed slashed interest rates to zero, vastly increased the size of its balance sheet to prop up the economy until the country can get back to work and rebuild. At the same time, despite the national debt already at historic levels, both in nominal dollars and as a proportion of GDP, the federal government's running up gargantuan future deficits to provide badly needed relief to taxpayers and businesses.
And as we talked throughout this whole program, I mean, we know there's going to be more and more stimulus and more bailouts on the horizon.
Oh, yeah. Bank of America commodity strategist Michael Widmer noted in this report that the size of major central bank balance sheets was around 25% of GDP for much of the past decade. The Fed stood at about $4.2 trillion, or 19.3% of GDP, as recently as 12/31/19. The balance sheet, the Fed's balance sheet, was as modest as $877 billion in early 2008. before rising to 2.2 trill at the end of 2009. It just kept rising after that with few and minor dropbacks along the way. Since the end of last year, Melody, the Fed's balance sheet has grown by a whopping $2.2 trillion, or 52%, to $6.6 trillion, and is now an estimated 31 to 37% of GDP. I say that in a range because we really don't know how much GDP has actually fallen in this year's first quarter and won't until figures are released later next month. But we think that's a reasonable estimate. Either way, as massive a number as the $6.6 trillion is in historical context, it's expected to continue to surge to at least 9 to 10. Almost lost my voice there. As the Fed shopping spree of unlimited assets to support the economy parties on.
And you know, most of the country, the people are trying to survive out there, not working, trying to, you know, entertain the children and so forth and whatnot. They don't know what these numbers are. They have no idea what 9 to 10 trillion dollars on the balance sheet of the Fed's, what it really means. And as I mentioned this before, we continue to have the White House and Congress, you know, how many of these phases of relief, stimulus, aid is going to be created.
Yeah, you know, interestingly, I mean, that 9 to 10 trillion, that used to be almost 10 years worth of annual spending by the U.S. government. And now it's well over 4. And that's just in the budget, doesn't include add-ons. And jobless claims, I mean, we've talked about that today and over the past week, now over 26 million, far more draconian than anything we've ever seen. One measure comparing workers receiving unemployment benefits to the total labor force shows an 11% insured employment rate as of today. That in turn points to a 23% overall headline jobless rate. And that excludes jobless Americans who are discouraged from looking for full-time work and those who've stopped looking altogether. So it's very well over 30%. Right now, things are rotten in Denmark, to say the least, Melody. In fact, they're not so rotten in Denmark right now. Here, well, that's another story. All those factors, though, and certainly several more, like oil prices, for instance, which you've rightly focused on in the past week, have fueled serious investor enthusiasm for gold.
And you know, it has, and all the things that we talk about. I mean, even Bank of America, they're willing to make a statement of 3,000 gold. Can you imagine where it really is going? Mm-hmm. Probably in a lot shorter time frame than what they're indicating. And you know, I'm not a fan of mining shares.
No,
I think mining shares are okay, but you got to know that's not gold. Don't get talked into it thinking that you're buying shares and it's gold. It isn't. And if you buy shares, just make sure you have the equal amount in gold. And the same thing with ETFs. ETF, again, is a promise. Both of these things are a promise. It's only paper. Right, Dave?
Right on, Melody. Values on paper only. It's an important distinction. Well, it could be critical, particularly these days when mining operations are now shut down. Think of what that's doing to those stock prices. Nevertheless, you know, at least for what they're worth, inflows and outflows to and from gold ETFs, exchange-traded funds, can show us general trends in the precious metal markets that affect at least the near-term prices of gold and silver. And here's the thing. ETFs have seen inflows for a record 22 straight days. It's one guy of RBC Global Wealth Management, George Giro, says gold prices are an economic and political barometer of our well-being, and investors are doing what central banks do, buying gold to shore up currencies. He says a price of $1,800 an ounce isn't too far ahead.
And you know, when they created the ETFs, I always says it just kind of watered down. Just think of all the money that goes into the ETFs that used to go into physical gold.
Yeah.
And people want to know why, you know, gold has such a struggle getting off and the buying is. That's one of the reasons. The same way with your shares. They watered down the, you know, I mean, there used to be two places that you could go to and only one place for physical. Then they watered it down. So it takes, you know, a little bit more. That money used to go into physical gold. And so it does seem like the country is beginning to perhaps begin to open up. Unwind the policies, and we'll see how soon American can return to work, Dave.
We will. And given all the influences we mentioned, is it any wonder that more and more analysts do see gold gearing up for a run right through $1,800 and $2,000 on its way to blazing a path toward $3,000?
And $5,000?
Indeed, and of course beyond. The drastic measures enacted so far this year by the Fed, Congress, and White House have already boosted gold by a tad north of 14%. And now two more financial institutions say gold is poised to rally another 74% over the next 18 months as investors continue seeking safety in the ultimate store of value.
And thanks, Dave. We're out of time today. Listeners, thank you for joining us. Be on the lookout in your email boxes for Dave's blog, and we'll be back on Monday. So until then, please be safe. Good night, and God bless.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.